Welcome back to the Real Talk with Dana podcast, where we talk all things nutrition, health, fitness, and mindset with a healthy side of sarcasm. I'm your host, Dana Montes of Real Food with Dana. I'm a nutritionist and body image coach, teaching women how to heal their relationship with food and their bodies, ditch the diet cycle for good, and truly thrive with real food, one delicious meal at a time. Hello, hello, friends. We are back. I'm actually just back from Orlando, where I was for almost a week. And yes, you probably guessed right. I was at the Wizarding World of Harry Potter and Disney, and it was the best. So I'm going to be doing a whole blog post recap on gluten-free eats in the whole Disney and Universal area. So you guys can look forward to that. And the answer to your question is yes, I totally cried during not only the Hogwarts Christmas celebration, but also when we were at the Magic Kingdom and we were watching the whole like old Disney movie montage with they like project some of the movie clips on the castle and they're doing music that goes with it during the fireworks, and I was just sobbing the whole time. It's totally fine. I'm almost 30 years old and still crying about it. It's fine. Anyways, so that's going to be coming soon. But today I'm excited because we're going to be talking about chronic pain on the podcast, which isn't something that we've really talked about before. So last week's episode with Brianna DiOrio, we talked a lot about inflammation and why inflammation isn't bad. And now it's a really interesting transition here because we're going to be talking about both acute pain and chronic pain. And you guys probably, I mean, you might have known this, but I didn't know this, that there are actually 100 million people in the US who experience chronic pain. And that's more than the statistics for cancer, diabetes, and cardiovascular disease combined. So the chances are that you or someone you know, whether a friend, a family member, or someone who's close to you, has also dealt with chronic pain, me included. And what's super cool about this interview is that I didn't realize until I did this interview that there are so many connections between chronic pain and nutrition in the way that they are both researched and treated by the medical system in terms of the way that the guidelines are created by the industry. So our guest today is Brendan Lundberg, who is the founder of Radiant Pain Relief Centers, and he, along with his partners, are working to change the way that chronic pain is treated. So the scientific understanding of pain has changed significantly over the years, and it's actually about the brain that is experiencing the pain, not the tissue. And pain is also intended to be a protective function. The nervous system's primary job is to keep us alive, which we have talked about multiple times in the like stress and undereating and overexercising podcasts on here. But in relation to pain, if pain is occurring, it's a signal from the brain not to do that again, whatever the pain was caused by, right? Because your body's trying to protect you. So we're also going to talk about the difference between acute and chronic pain. So I'm going to give you two quick examples of this before we get started. Acute pain is like a couple of weeks ago, which we're going to allude to this in the podcast, when I completely smashed my finger open at the gym in a very stupid freak accident, and my finger split open, and then I had to get stitches, which sucked. But what's super interesting about this is that now I fully understand that brain or that pain is coming from the brain and not from the tissues, because immediately when I had that accident and dropped the dumbbell on my hand, I felt no pain at all, which we would assume that's just adrenaline and stuff. And it didn't hurt until later when my brain was able to catch up with what I had just done, when it was like, holy crap, literally, what did you just do? I'm going to make you feel all of this pain. And then on the other side of things, there's chronic pain. So I don't think I've talked about this on a podcast before, but for about a year, maybe even a year and a half in my Olympic weightlifting training and lifting and just CrossFit training, I was dealing with a lot of lower back pain, and I didn't understand why it was happening or where it had started, because it wasn't something that I did when I was lifting, but then later when I was lifting, it definitely would not help it. And it didn't finally heal until I started seeing a PT who is amazing. His name is Zach, and his practice is in Bethesda, Maryland, and I'll link him in the show notes. But no, my chronic pain didn't go away no matter how much like massage and foam rolling and lacrosse ball and all of this stuff. It didn't go away until I finally saw a practitioner. So if you are dealing with chronic pain, don't just take Advil or Aleve or anything. Go see somebody who's an expert in it. And Brendan, who is talking about this today, is an expert in this. So we're also talking about how the way that most doctors are trained in the treatment of chronic pain is a really similar way that they are trained in nutrition. So they're not getting a lot of hours in school, and they are trained to basically pop a pill solution instead of taking a root cause approach to find the real source of the pain or the symptoms and then treating that root cause. Because as we all know, and I've said multiple times before, popping a pill is basically just a band-aid approach. Kind of like with these, elimination diets and stuff are just a band-aid approach. It's not going to solve the root cause of why you're having gut issues or whatever it is. So, in a similar way to nutrition, industry is also informing the science and the guidelines of chronic pain treatment. So, we know that in the 80s and 90s, the grain, soy, and corn industries helped inform the food pyramid, which we know now made everyone more unhealthy, sick, and now something like 40% of the US population is obese. And I bet you that there's a large population of that population also that has chronic pain, since we're talking about both of these today. So in chronic pain, too many people are prescribed NSAIDs, which are non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, which you guys have probably heard me talk about before as wrecking the gut when they're taking for too long. Or on the stronger end of things, we have narcotics and opioid-derived drugs prescriptions, which are only masking pain in the short term, but then creating more complex issues long term as sleep is disrupted, digestion is disrupted, nutritional absorption goes down as a result of the medication. And the only solution that these people now have to manage their chronic pain is to continue to take these medications. So what's really cool is Brendan is going to talk about a therapy that helps with shifting pain and the perception of pain in the brain in a way that is retraining the brain and decreases these sufferers' chronic pain significantly, which then empowers clients to reclaim their health, which then leads them to seek out better nutritional approaches, sleep, stress, mindset, and all of the things. And I'm talking too much, and let's just go straight into Brendan here.
My name is Brendan Lundberg, and I'm the founder of Radiant Pain Relief Centers, and we are working hard to change the way that chronic pain is understood and treated. I'm not a clinician, but I spent my career in healthcare-related business and grew up in healthcare. My dad was the CEO of hospitals and in hospital administration growing up when I was a kid, and I had an uncle that was a chiropractor and other family that were in different aspects of healthcare delivery and healthcare business. And it's something that's always been kind of passionate to me. I spent, I've done a variety of different things from selling therapies and technologies and solutions to physicians to helping those physicians market and reach new clients and operate their businesses more effectively. I worked in the hearing aid industry for about a decade. And actually, the hearing aid industry was an interesting kind of subset of healthcare and really kind of a predicate experience to what we're doing at Radiant. I was also head of sales and marketing for a breath test technology, a device to measure oxidative stress or free radical damage
Oh,
through a breath
interesting.
test. That was a really eye-opening experience for me because even though I had grown up with chiropractic care and had a fairly open mind to alternative approaches to health and to wellness and to medicine. It was really that experience that really exposed me to a deeper level to functional medicine and much more progressive thinking, clinicians. So yeah, and then heard about this technology that is now central to our model. I spent a couple years trying to sell it to doctors and found that they didn't understand the science, and that's in large part because they're trained in science from the 1960s when it comes to pain, and so they
Yep,
just
it's
didn't.
just like nutrition.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. It's just like nutrition. In fact, I was. In August, I was at JJ Virgin's Mindshare Summit in San Diego, and Dr. Mark Hyman was there speaking along with a Congressman Tim Ryan, I think his name is, from Ohio. And they were talking about when it comes to nutrition, that the industry has so much informed the science that it's really, eroded our understanding of, traditionally, I guess, growing up. I'm 41 years old, and so with the food triangle that I was taught, and you know, the nutritional guidelines that we were taught, and you know, the food industry and how they've informed nutritional guidelines and you know, accessibility to food is pretty crazy. And the same is true in pain for sure. I mean, because people don't die from pain. You have industry really informing the science, and so they didn't understand it, and there was really, frankly, an economic disincentive for them to adopt it. And so realizing that we had maybe an opportunity to really make an impact in the world and change the way that chronic pain is understood and treated, I just built a different business model, which is building clinics around this technology to go directly to the consumer and hopefully be able to scale this up and you know, shift people's understanding around pain and make therapy accessible, affordable, and replicable across the U.S. and throughout the world at some point.
Yeah, I love that. So what's your personal connection to all of this? So what led you to be so passionate about researching and treating chronic pain?
You know, I to be honest, I wish that I had a little bit more of an altruistic initial reason. I just saw a business opportunity, I think, that was unmet. And you know, I'm a chronic pain sufferer. Mm-hmm. I have low back pain, and it's been present since I was a kid in my teens, and then through my 20s and 30s, probably different times kind of flaring up and getting worse. And that gave me some level of sympathy to it. My wife was on her own health journey for about a little over a decade, in which she suffered a variety of kind of undiagnosable conditions. She was diagnosed with Hashimoto's and chronic inflammatory response syndrome. And you know, we tried so many different therapies, allopathic initially, and then when those didn't resolve it and she didn't want to be on medications, that she got deeper into alternative care, kind of simultaneous to my own career going down that path, and you know, spent lots of money on supplements and lots of different things. And ultimately, it was a brain retraining process for her called Dynamic Neural Retraining System, or DNRS, that really helped her resolve her pain, or not her pain, but her symptomology, and really get her health back. And so that made me very sympathetic to the journey that our clients at Radiant go through. And because I'm a pain sufferer, you know, I experience it to some degree, although my pain is so mild compared to most of what our clients deal with, what's really disrupted their lives. But, you know, so I guess, you know, I started because I saw a business opportunity. We're now several years into it. The business is really still in its infancy in many ways, and not really a profitable operation. And so it's not a financial motivation that's kept me going this time. It's really been seeing our clients get their lives back and restored back to a level of normalcy and function, and not just masking the pain, but getting educated about it, getting it resolved in a safer, more effective way. And then through that process, becoming empowered to say, wow, if I can shift my pain this much through this therapy that retrains my brain, what else could I do? And they start to become, you know, kind of become hungry to seek out better nutritional, nutritional approaches and sleep and movement and mindset. And, you know, they just make wholesale changes in their life because they don't take it for granted, and they become empowered. And so it's really that's the catalyst, is to see people, you know, reclaim back. Last year, 72,000 people in the United States died of opioid overdoses. And so, you know, I really feel like I have a moral responsibility as much as a business opportunity at this point to try to advance this technology and this therapy and this approach and this message.
Yeah, definitely. And I really like how you focus on the education piece, and as this being a catalyst for people then becoming motivated to assess what might be going wrong or what might not be optimal in the other areas of their life. Because we talk about that with nutrition too, like it kind of starts with food. Once you've figured out what food makes you feel your best and you can eat that most of the time, and then, you know, leave a little bit of room for indulgences, you can start to assess the other areas of your life, like, am I getting enough sleep? How is my stress? Oh my gosh, chronic pain is probably something that I should address as well. So what is the difference, if you could explain to people, between acute and chronic pain?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'll start with this. The commonality of pain, even though we don't experience it this way, is that it's neurogenic, or it's driven from the brain. It comes from the brain. The tissue actually doesn't even have an ability to feel pain. It has sensors that, you know, different nerves and different sensors that gather information. That information is transmitted through the nervous system. The brain interprets it and assigns value and assigns meaning to it. You were just telling me about an accident that you had with your thumb and that you didn't feel pain. The immediate aftermath of that event happening, although it was pretty dramatic experience, but the pain came later. There's a variety of reasons why why you didn't feel the pain in the short term. But pain is intended to be a protective function. You know, if we have our hand on the hot stove, or if we've smashed our thumb or broken an ankle, feeling pain is saying, hey, stop doing this. It's getting our attention. Avoid doing this in the future. Quit doing whatever it is you're doing. Let it heal and learn from this so that you can stay safe in the future. You know, our nervous system's primary job is to keep us alive. And so that means keeping us aware of things that are threats to our ability to stay alive. So that could be injuries and trauma and stress and a variety of different things. And then it's always working, our nervous system. So, you know, the hierarchy of priority is our vision system, our ability to see and scan the landscape. Second is our vestibular system, which is the organs of our inner ear that keep us balanced and upright and able to be agile and move in our environment. And then third is proprioception, or kind of our sensing systems, you know, hot, cold, rough, smooth. And so chronic pain, you know, we think of pain very cause and effect. And in the short term, in an acute pain situation, like the hand on the hot stove or a smashed thumb, it's pretty clear why you're hurting. And it's pretty clear why, it's causing that sensation to get you to take action. And that's pretty clear. In chronic pain, however, it becomes less clear. And in a book that I recently wrote along with my founding medical partner, Dr. David Farley, called Radiant Relief, A Case for a Better Solution to Chronic Pain, in that book, I make the analogy that chronic pain is really more like credit card debt. And, you know, the nervous system, again, is kind of taking an account of all the different things that it's experiencing that may be threats to our ability to stay alive. And those are kind of like charges to an account. So if I have a credit card with a $3,000 limit and I start using that credit card for routine things like buying gas or groceries or school supplies for the kids, as long as I'm making the minimum payment every month and keeping the balance below the limit, then everybody's fine. The bank is getting paid and I have access to this credit. But if there is some sort of event, or if there's an aggregation of too much of this threat activity or charging to an account that puts us up to the limit, now the nervous system starts to say, we're in a kind of a desperate situation. We're at or we're beyond, the limit of what we can endure. And, you know, I need you to take action. And so it becomes a little bit less clear, like, what was the tipping point? What was the reason? Sometimes it's clear, like, you know, we can use the analogy of the credit card, like the car breaks down and you have to buy a new transmission, and it's clear, like, oh, that was a big event and that's what put me over the top. But even in that case, if the person has a lower level of threat aggregation on their nervous system because they live healthier, they have less stress, they eat better, they move better, they sleep better, all the things that, you know, really make us healthy, then they can endure an event like this and their body will rebound back. But in chronic pain, you know, it's an aggregation of all these different things. And unfortunately, instead of trying to address that, too many people just get medications prescribed to them. And that actually just, you know, maybe it masks the pain short term, helps them feel a little bit better, but it really kind of creates more complexity, you know, long term as they become, you know, heavier if they're not moving, sleep is disrupted, digestion is disrupted, nutritional absorption is disrupted. And, you know, by the time they come to see us after years or even decades of chronic pain, they're pretty complicated. They have a lot of comorbidities and a lot of complications to them.
Most people would assume that if you're going through some kind of pain, that means something is wrong.
Right.
So what is the education piece that you're trying to do with people around that kind of misconception?
Yeah, well, you know, again, in the short term, it's kind of clear, like, why it hurts, typically. I mean, there is you smash your finger, or you have some sort of disease growing in your tissue, some sort of pathology. I mean, that's a protective function. But in chronic pain, it's not really correlated one-to-one, direct tissue abnormality or tissue. In fact, there's been studies that have shown you could image, like, under MRI, 1,000 people. You can go to Central Park in New York City, grab 1,000 people, image them, and you're going to find a pretty high presentation, like between 60 and 80% of the population will have some sort of tissue abnormality. They'll have herniated disc or arthritis or a torn meniscus or something, but they don't know it because they don't feel pain. And so it's, you know, it's asymptomatic, essentially. Conversely, you could take 1,000 chronic pain sufferers, and, you know, there's been studies that have shown this, then image them and you don't find a correlated presentation of tissue abnormality. So chronic pain really isn't indicative of, you know, a problem in the tissue really anymore. And in fact, because it's neurogenic, it's coming from the brain, it is often interfering with the body's ability to fully heal and certainly to function and to move like it's supposed to. And I think, you know, too many people are ill-educated, including probably many clinicians, about pain. And so the recommendation often becomes, well, limit your movement because we don't want, you know, to make it worse. But the body is intended to move. And so if you continue to restrict movement, you're actually probably making the problem worse and limiting the body's ability to heal and to return back to normal function.
Right. So that's a great segue, because I wanted you to talk about more about the typical way that chronic pain is treated and the way that people normally manage their chronic pain.
Well, you know, from an allopathic or Western medicine perspective, you start with pharmaceuticals, and there's basically two types. Essentially, there's the opioid-based or the narcotic-based drugs, and you know, as I just mentioned, 72,000 people died of opioid overdoses last year. We had this opioid addiction epidemic, and so clearly, that therapy is not the right approach for managing pain long term. And you know, the reality is that it works to mask the pain or to minimize the pain in the short term. And it's the same way that alcohol or opium did for our caveman ancestors. You know, I mean, that's kind of how industry is born out of this biochemical approach. And that's really what's informed, you know, therapy is this, you know, industry approach to managing pain with a drug. The other class of drugs are called neuroleptics or anticonvulsant drugs like Lyrica or gabapentin. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the mechanism of action is different, but it's changing kind of the chemistry of the brain. And the result is oftentimes really debilitating side effects, cognitive impairment, sleep disruption, mood changes, weight gain, you know, and inevitably both of those types of pharmaceutical approaches end up causing side effects, I mean, or addiction or both. And so, you know, they are not the right approach, even if they are effective in the short term. And I understand why somebody who's in pain is just desperate to take something and kind of get their life under, you know, somewhat of a manageable situation. But masking it isn't really understanding it or resolving it. Next, you know, you have a little bit more invasive procedures. Sometimes you have surgery or different types of injections. There's actually medical literature that now shows that cortisone injections, which are a fairly common approach, actually accelerate the degeneration of the tissue.
Oh, wow.
And they make the person worse. Yeah, so they might get some relief, and it's very common to hear people that have steroid injections done and they get some relief initially, but then it kind of gets less and less efficacious over time. And, you know, it's in part because the tissue's actually being, you know, kind of degrading further. And so, you know, you have probably a growing number of people approaching it from, you know, more of a biologic standpoint, doing like PRP and stem cells. And I think that's great. I mean, anytime you have good biology, it's going to help. But understanding that pain is neurogenic, it may or may not actually resolve the pain. Mm-hmm. Then you have more invasive procedures, again, surgery, you know, kind of corrective structural things that may or may not be necessary. If there's a dysfunction in terms of movement or functionality, then correcting the physiology is always good, I think. But sometimes that surgery the nervous system can perceive that as another threat on the charge account, if you will. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people can come out of those things worse. In fact, there's a very common disorder and a diagnosis code for something called failed back surgery syndrome, because it's very common for people to, you know, have a back surgery done and then end up in just as much pain.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Or worse. And then the doctors are really baffled because it's like, well, why, you know, we don't know, Ms. Jones, why you're still hurting, you know, your MRI looks perfect. So yeah, so that's tough. And then, you know, then there's things like spinal cord stimulators that are implanted into the body, and there's nerve ablations. I mean, they're just becoming kind of increasingly invasive. And, you know, our approach is to use a technology to basically retrain the brain and restore the brain back to more normal perception of pain through artificial nerve impulses that are delivered via electrodes on the skin. And we can talk more about that. But I think, you know, there's been, a growing awareness about the brain's involvement and things that can kind of help change the brain. But like, even meditation can be very powerful. But for somebody that's in excruciating pain, that's hard. That's a hard thing to say. It's kind of like, well, you're sitting in the fire, but just meditate through it and don't get
right.
But at some point it becomes kind of offensive. And that's why you see so many people, like right now with the changing policies around opioid prescribing, there's a lot of pain sufferers who are really feeling attacked, and they're really feeling like they're the ones being left behind because they need these medications, and it's an unfortunate situation. And so I do feel, like I said, a real urgency to proclaim this message that that there are other ways to manage this pain that are more safe and more effective.
Yeah, and then I'd love to also talk about one way that people manage their chronic pain or just nagging issues they have are with NSAIDs, whether it's Advil or Aleve or Tylenol or whatever it is. Because, so I'm a swim coach as well, and it's very common to hear that, oh, like, you just have a nagging shoulder pain, just when you get home from practice, like, put some ice on it and then take some Advil, like, you'll be fine. You just kind of have to manage it for your whole life. And I'm also an Olympic weightlifting athlete, and I at our CrossFit gym, I mean, all the time you'll just hear, oh, you know, I'm just really sore, but I'll just take some Advil or some ibuprofen when I get home. So right. I'd love for you to talk more about the science behind NSAIDs or non-steroidal anti-inflammatories.
Well, you know, I'm not a scientist. I'm a business guy. So I don't know if I'm going to be able to get in as deep. You probably even are more knowledgeable. But there is definitely evidence that those things disrupt, you know, normal body systems, digestion, kidney function, liver function in some cases. And, you know, I mean, the body is very resilient. And, you know, popping an Advil once or twice is probably not going to be the end of the world. But we see too many people that are just chronically popping high dosage of these. And there is problems. I mean, there's problems from an organ function standpoint. There's problems from, you know, the gut biome standpoint and disruption there. And if we're not absorbing nutrition, what does that inevitably lead to? Even ice. I mean, I think there's, you might know more about this, but there's even evidence that icing actually disrupts the normal healing cascade that takes place. And it will make the problem, makes it feel a little bit better in the short term because you're kind of numbing the tissue, but it doesn't really help resolve, you know, the healing or the normal kind of pain evolution that should be taking place following an injury or, you know, stress and strain to a muscle.
Right, exactly. It's funny that, so for a very long time, I've been a certified lifeguard, and we have to get CPR first aid and everything when you're a swim coach. And that is what they teach us in the first aid class. It's just ice and Elevate every time there's any kind of injury, whether it's, I mean, obviously if it's an acute injury and like something's really hurting, yes, like you said, ice will kind of numb the pain at first. But if you keep doing that, especially if it's like a chronic shoulder injury or something, I mean, from my understanding, doesn't that just inhibit the inflammatory or healing process?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Again, I'm not an expert in that, so I don't know, you know, how deeply I'm qualified to speak to it, but you're absolutely right. And I think increasingly people are realizing that, at least in some circles. But, you know, we have tradition, we have history, we have like so much kind of like socialized, you know, understanding, although it's I guess faulty understanding, but understanding around this, that it's so hard to change that. I was just reading a really interesting article too about, you know, we think about lactic acid as the cause of why we hurt after working out, and it actually isn't lactic acid. It has nothing to do with lactic acid. Lactic acid is, I guess, a biologic response to help accelerate healing in the tissue, and it doesn't have anything to do with why the muscle feels sore afterwards. But everybody's been taught that since we were in, you know, grade school.
Yeah, they definitely teach us that as athletes when we're younger too. And like sometimes we even say that to our kids, oh, you're sore because you're building up the lactic acid. When I was an athlete in college, we actually did this swim set every Wednesday. That was like a bunch of sprints, just back to back. You would sprint for 100, which is 4 laps of the pool, or 8 lengths, and then you would rest while your teammates were going, and then you would get up and do it again, like 8 or 16 or 20 times. And they called it lactates because the theory is that you're building up the lactic acid, which then would make you sore later. But I don't really know. I've never looked into the science behind it, but that is very interesting.
Well, I think the point is that I think we all have a responsibility as individuals, as stewards of bodies that we own, that we are in charge of, to understand our bodies and to listen to our bodies and to be, you know, I think clinicians are well-intentioned, and I don't mean to sound like they aren't, because I think they go into practicing whatever type of medicine they do because they genuinely care about people and they want to help them. But they're human too, and they're subject to the same realities that we are as humans, which is, you know, biases and, you know, marketing and education and, you know, and I think that each of us has the responsibility to say what is my body telling me and what is it I need to do. And in chronic pain, see, we all experience pain, and it's a very human experience. Again, in the short term, it's probably pretty clear why something's hurting, and we just need to do what we can to let that tissue heal. But in chronic pain, what it's trying to tell us is maybe deeper. There's stress, there's emotions, there's history, there's, you know, there's a lot of multifactorial conditions that play into this, and you know, just masking it with a drug is kind of the equivalent of, you know, if you have credit card debt, drinking a six pack of beer. You might feel better in the short term, care a little less about the credit card debt, but it isn't going to resolve it, and in fact, maybe it's even making it worse. So, you know, I think my message and my hope is that we can educate people about pain, and even though pain is uncomfortable, nobody likes it. It is a teacher. Like, it's like the master teacher. It's like the reason that we're probably having a human experience is so that we can learn between, you know, the contrast between pain and joy and, you know, struggle and triumph and what, you know, whatever else. And so I think when we can get quiet and we can listen to our bodies, there's so much power in that at an individual level. And, you know, I think historically, you know, our generation, our parents' generation, certainly our grandparents' generation, we looked to the physicians as like almost like a godlike figure. They could do no wrong, and whatever they recommended, we would do. And I think that there's a shift that's taking place, which I think is really a powerful and important thing, and that's that people are realizing that they are their own doctor in some cases. And now, I'm, you know, if you need a doctor, you need a doctor. But I think that there's so much power in listening to your own internal voice and kind of, you know, having confidence in your own internal wisdom about how your body is doing and what it needs to do. And, you know, you're a big advocate and champion of good nutrition, and that's so important. And, you know, most of us in the United States and increasingly throughout the world are out of shape and fat. And, you know, that's a contributory factor to a variety of things, pain certainly being part of that.
Yeah. And I mean, I love how you said that. It's not like we can just, as much as we would like to, just put the impetus or the responsibility on someone else for our pain or whatever chronic issues we have going on. I think people are finally starting to realize that you have to be your own advocate and you have to take responsibility for your own health, whether that is through working on your nutrition, working on your sleep, working on your stress, your chronic pain, all these issues that you may have, because no one knows all of the ins and outs of your body and all of the struggles you've had and this whole timeline of your health history better than you do. And no matter what practitioner you go to, because, I mean, if we're being honest, like if you go to an allopathic or Western medicine doctor, you're going to get, you know, 5, maybe 15 minutes with them. If you work with someone like me, who's a nutritionist, you might get an hour and a half with them once or twice a month. But even then, you have this whole other life experience that no one is going to fully understand your story until you've been able to understand what is going on. And they can help you sort through it and everything. But I mean, in the end, we do, like you were saying, you have to do your own research. You have to take responsibility and try and figure out what's going on with you, or at least take the responsibility to go to maybe multiple practitioners so you can get like a wider scope of what might be going on before you can achieve true healing. Because especially with thinking about the doctors as being gods, which we definitely used to think about. But, and I really like how you also said, you know, most people that enter whatever the medical field is, whether it's chronic pain management or you're a Western medicine doctor, a naturopathic doctor, a nutritionist, whatever it is, all of us have a background of wanting to be healers and help people. But we also fall victim to our teachings unless you go deep into the research to find other things that you may not have been taught. And like we were saying before on the nutrition front, some doctors and even nutritionists or dietitians, if you're taught using the food pyramid guidelines, if you are following those instructions and giving people that, you're just going to make them sicker, even if you have the best of intentions.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that we do, I mean, we really are trying to change the way that pain is understood and how it's treated. And the process for us begins You know, people hear about us, or if they see an ad, they're driven to our website, and the website has some kind of educational and informational videos, but then it puts them into a kind of a questionnaire that gets them thinking differently. And basically the idea is like, what is your why? What is your definition of success? What is the reason that you are ready at this point in your life to overcome your pain? Because pain is such a complicated thing, and I don't mean to minimize anybody's experience with it, but there are people out there who certainly use pain as a crutch. It becomes kind of a psychological aspect in their life. It becomes kind of part of their identity, for better or for worse. They get attention from it. I mean, again, I'm not trying to minimize anybody's experience, but it's so multifactorial and it's so complicated that we want to make sure that we're working with, you know, clients, using our resources and our time with clients who really are focused on getting better, and then using that as for them as the catalyst for why they're going to get better. Like, if, you know, pain robs us, chronic pain robs us of kind of the best of humanity. You know, we become less engaged in the work that fulfills us and that we find joy in. We become less connected to the people that we love and the relationships that are important to us. And, you know, physically, our body starts to change because of the pains, weight gain, cognitive function, all these other things. And so we lose sight of who we are or who the best of us might be. And I'm a personal kind of personal development junkie. I love it. And so we're actually baking a little bit of that into our business because we think it's really fundamentally necessary to empower people and not just get them out of pain, but to hopefully put them on a path in which they're inspired and they're motivated and they have the tools and resources to be able to make wholesale changes in their life that really make them healthier. And it starts with their why. And if they don't have a why, if they don't have something to fight for, it makes the fight so much harder.
And the way you were describing that, chronic pain sounds exactly like depression.
I mean, they're certainly intertwined, because when you have pain and you're not able to do the things that bring you joy, it does depress you. And our mm-hmm. clients come into us typically, like I said, years or decades in this pain experience, and they've lost who they are. They've forgotten that. And they feel betrayed by their bodies. They feel trapped in their bodies. A high percentage of our clients tell us, I would say 60%+ tell us they've contemplated suicide because they're so desperate to feel better. And so sometimes you wonder, okay, well, what preceded? Was the depression, did that precede the pain? Did the pain precede and cause the depression? But they become so intertwined and interconnected, it is very complicated. And again, that's part of the reason that we create a whole new experience and get the client focused back on what is important to them, who needs them to show up for, you know, in their lives, their family, their kids, their spouse, themselves. And if they start getting reconnected back into that, that is a huge catalyst and a huge motivator for them to do the work that's going to be necessary for them to get better. And, you know, our path is, I think, a remarkably effective path for resolving pain, but unless they make other changes in their life, it's not going to be as lasting as it otherwise could.
Yeah, that's so cool and so powerful. So speaking of all of these connections and the brain and stuff, I would love to talk about, because we've alluded to it earlier in this podcast, but we haven't actually talked about, like, what is the therapy that you guys are doing, and how does it actually change the brain's perception of pain?
Yeah. So again, because the nervous system's job is to keep us alive, it records all these different threats and it creates these little connections, what we call neurotags, which are associations, and those are multifactorial. They're a product of our upbringing and our education and our, you know, genetics. I mean, it's so multifactorial. There's a lot of different things. So rather than and it's neurogenic. It's all coming from the brain and then experienced in the tissue. So rather than using a therapy that just addresses the tissue, or giving somebody a drug that, you know, is just masking the problem, we use an FDA-cleared medical device, which is known in the medical literature as scrambler therapy. And it's not a name that I picked, but it's called that because it generates a dynamic set of artificial nerve impulses that kind of replicate endogenous or natural no-pain nerve signaling in the body. And so we attach electrodes on the skin in proximity to the pain, but actually in healthy tissue. So like, if, let's say somebody has chronic pain of the hand, it could be almost anything, arthritis, shingles, neuropathy, phantom pain. It really doesn't matter because once it becomes chronic, the brain is kind of habituated in creating these neural connections or these neural wirings to expect and perpetuate the pain phenomenon. So we attach electrodes on the skin and we transmit this new information up through the nervous system. The message is sent. It's then scrambled in the device and resent, scrambled in the device and resent. So over about 40 minutes plugged onto the therapy, the brain is flooded with a dynamic set of new information, and that causes the brain to have to work to interpret it, basically. And that working, that interpretation is what breaks up those neural tags, those current existing neural connections, and it creates new neural pathways, or this is neuroplasticity, the brain's ability to learn and to remodel. And so in chronic pain, it becomes wired to expect the pain. Through our process and our therapy, we're able to give the brain new information and teach it a more normalized perception of pain. So we don't make anybody superhuman. We're not taking the pain away. It's really more of a restoration of what should be normal. So that's done, like anything the brain learns, it's repetition and exposure. And so it's typically a daily session for about an hour for 2 or 3 weeks. And then periodically thereafter, they might need to come back in, depending on the individual and their pain and their circumstances, for a booster treatment or a refresher course to reinforce the neuroplastic change that's taken place and maintain that pain relief. But we average through this process an 84% reduction in pain, which is, literally life-changing and life-saving for our clients. And about 90% of our clients conclude at zero pain or 1, 2, or 3 levels of pain. So even if there's still some pain present, and pain is very human, so it's not too many of us that have no pain ever. If they're at 0 to 3, that's a livable level of pain, and they're able to get off of medications, they're able to start, making some bigger changes in their life and get, reclaiming that lost territory, which is a pretty neat thing to be a part of.
That is so cool. I've never heard it explained that way before. So that's groundbreaking, right? So,
well, I think it sounds too good to be true. And that's part of the challenge we've had. As I mentioned, I spent a few years trying to sell the technology to physicians and clinicians, and they didn't understand it. It sounded too good to be true. And I was basically told I was peddling snake oil. And so, building this clinic model allows us to create a level of consistency that's necessary to build a brand. If I sold it to Hospital A and Hospital B and Clinic A, B, C, D, each of those environments is different. So the experience the client experiences in those environments will be different. The outcomes will be different. So creating consistency is really necessary in order for us to build a brand and to scale the business that makes it then able to market it and to educate and to drive a shift in understanding. So it has to kind of all work together from a business standpoint and from a clinical standpoint.
So why aren't more doctors or therapies using this besides that a lot of them just think it's snake oil?
Well, I think that's it. They haven't been educated on the science, and generally speaking, they haven't probably heard of this technology. And they probably, and if they know the science and they don't know this technology, it's like, well, what do you do? Meditate, yoga. Those things are awesome. I'm a huge fan of those. But again, if you're in excruciating pain and you can't even stand at the kitchen sink to wash the dishes, telling somebody to take a yoga class or to meditate is it feels offensive to them.
It's almost insensitive.
Yeah, it's almost insensitive. And so, I think that in order for us to build a shift in understanding, you have to have a therapy that is scalable and consistent. And so the way that we're approaching that, I think, from our business model reinforces that. And, we aren't, you mentioned a few minutes ago that you only have a few minutes when you go to see the allopathic doctor. Well, that's not because the doctor wouldn't like to spend more time with you. It's that he or she has a business reality that they're trying to manage too. And that's that, they make most of their money through insurance, when they get reimbursed for the time they spend with you as a patient. And those reimbursement rates have been declining for many years. And so they're making less money for the same amount of work they're doing. And simultaneously, their costs are increasing because they have to employ more people to manage the insurance process, which is just completely burdensome. And because they're getting busier in terms of their time, they have to have more nurses and mid-level providers. And so they have more resources of people to be able to see patients. And so, they're squeezed from the top, they're squeezed from the bottom. And the consequence is they've gone to a throughput model. It's like, how many patients can we see and turn through this room in each hour? And so that's just eroded the quality of care. And so rather than trying to, model our therapy into that existing world, we've chosen to just build our own world and, build a business structure that supports the best quality care outcomes, and that makes, you know, makes it so that it can become efficient business. We can price it affordably to the customer and still, you know, build a company that can operate it, you know, in the profit.
Right. So is there just more of an economic incentive for doctors to just keep using the opioids and the drugs that people are taking for chronic pain as opposed to doing this therapy?
Well, yeah, I mean, for our therapy, because it requires somebody sitting there for an hour, that's a pretty big opportunity cost. Again, mm-hmm. when you think about the throughput of how many other clients you could put through a room in an hour. You also have, you know, there's a bit of an art to its application. It's kind of technician dependent. And so having somebody that's dedicated to it, that really knows how to use the therapy. And again, because not only is there a technical application to how you apply the technology to the person, but there's an interpersonal dynamic that's really important too. How you communicate, how you make that person feel comfortable, how you connect them back to their why. And so we train our staff specifically to do that. And that's hard to replicate with a part-time person that's kind of dabbling in it, you know. And then because it's not covered by insurance, you have to also have somebody that's, you know, somewhat capable to do you know, a selling aspect to the business and to create value for the customer so they understand why it's worth, why they should open their wallet and invest in themselves and invest in the therapy. And those roles just don't really exist very, very consistently in most healthcare environments. So our model is to, you know, to build that and, you know, not have to try to make it work within the confines of other places. Our business model as we grow and open centers, though, will be to allow doctors to co-own a center with us, or clinicians, chiropractors, naturopaths, massage therapists, anybody that touches pain sufferers and they'd like to be involved in us, you know, they can co-own a center with us and have a passive involvement, which I think would be economically sensible. So the opioids aspect is primarily driven just by the reality of how busy the doctors are and, you know, how, frankly, how little they probably know the neuroscience of pain. And they just want to, you know, they just have a responsibility to try to get their patient feeling as good as possible and out the door as quickly as possible. And so that's why, I mean, the medications have been kind of a path of least resistance that way. The pain doctors, on the other hand, do make a lot of money from injections and from surgery and from other things like that. I mean, you know, a physician will typically get between $1,000 and $2,000 for a single cortisone injection or steroid injection, which maybe takes 30 minutes of their time versus maybe a couple hundred dollars out of pocket for an hour of time if they can effectively charge, you know, the patient for our therapy that way. So there is an economic disincentive for them to migrate away from what's currently happening. And, you know, industry isn't going to really disrupt itself. And so just like everything, just like Uber, you know, Uber wasn't created by the taxi companies and, Airbnb wasn't created by Hilton. Our vision is to change the way that chronic pain is treated. And we're doing that as kind of an outside party.
That's so cool. Well, this has been super informative. And I've actually never talked about any of this stuff on the podcast before. So I appreciate you for that. So thank you. So one last question before I let you go, not related to chronic pain.
Okay.
What is the most influential book that you have read recently?
Well, you know, I love to read, so I read a lot. But I would say one of the most influential books, and I have read it recently, but I've also read it a few different times in my life, is Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl.
Oh, cool.
Are you familiar with that book?
I've heard of it, but I haven't read it yet.
Yeah, so Viktor Frankl was in a concentration camp in Germany or Austria. I can't remember where he was at. And, you know, it's just basically it's the human struggle, and it's the human's will and the human ability to overcome and to persevere and to triumph. And I love it. I love it from a personal standpoint. I love it because there's so many parallels to the work that we do in helping our clients regain their life and overcome the challenges they face. And, you know, being human is hard work sometimes, and it's uncomfortable work sometimes, and it's lonely work sometimes. And I think any of us that are in somewhat of a care role, we find so much joy in helping to re-spark that emotion in people, that desire to return back to the best of what they're capable to be and who they want to be and to live more comfortably and to live more productively. So it's an awesome book. Highly recommend it.
Awesome. Well, I will put that in the show notes so people can find it. And then before I let you go, please let people know where they can find you and where they can find your center and the therapy.
Well, you know, we have a few different websites, but I would say if you're interested in what we're doing, go to radiantrelief.com. And if you're a pain sufferer, there'll be a spot there you can register and get information, and you can indicate if you're a pain sufferer or if you care for someone who's a pain sufferer. If you're a medical professional, you're interested in understanding our therapy and maybe the business opportunity that's tied to our therapy. And then lastly, we just filed with the Security and Exchange Commission, with the SEC, to begin basically a very robust crowdfunding model that allows anybody that's interested in helping us to build and to change the way that pain is understood and treated, and hopefully by doing that, change the world and make it a little bit of a better place. If you're interested in being involved, anybody can invest as little as $500, and you can make a non-binding reservation. We can't take your investment until we're approved by the SEC, but you can make a non-binding reservation if you're interested, or at least learn more about that too. So we'd love anybody who's listening to you know, reach out, and if we can help you feel better or help somebody in your life feel better, we'd love to do that. And if you're interested in any other aspect of what we're trying to do to change the world, please let us know.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Oh, it's been my pleasure, Dana. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Real Talk with Dana. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your family and friends, and share the love by throwing us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, which will help spread the word and do a small part to correct all of the fitness and nutrition misinformation or bullshit that's out there, which is only causing people to become more unhealthy. Come find me anywhere at Real Food with Dana on Instagram and Facebook. Join the Real Talk with Dana Facebook group for more support and discussion on these episodes. And come hang out over on realfoodwithdana.com for the show notes and totally epic and delicious recipes.